Hey guys, it's Dave Desmalchin. You're watching Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy.
We're on YouTube.
On YouTube.
Yes.
Wake up, Juju. Time to go to work. All right. Can we talk about it? Wake up, I get it, I get it, I go. With everyone saying I'm up next, it's not my fault that the vocals are gold. They're making the haters so upset. My life is a movie, the way that I roll. They saying I'm goofy, but baby, you know I'm making everybody obsessed. Cause we the best, how we get wrecked. And I know we gonna get wrecked. We gonna get wrecked.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Juju, aka Straw Hat Goofy, your movie guy, and you're here on a new episode of Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. I'm sitting here with my buddy David Desmalchin. Man!
Man, it's so good to see you, and thanks for having me on your new show.
Dude.
I'm honored I get to be a part of launching this really cool show you're doing. I've been a fan of you for so long, so this is great.
I've been a fan of you for so long.
Like, I'm a fan of your fanness. I'm a fan of how dedicated you are to the things that you love. The world needs more people who are willing to just commit to how much they love things and not be afraid of saying, I am a super nerd this obscure, weird anime thing or whatever it is, and I'm going to just wave that flag proudly.
Thank you. Hey, look at that. Speaking of flags.
One Piece.
I got my One Piece thing going.
And I'm a relatively new One Piece fan in the last year, I didn't even understand where, like, your handle came from until my son, I said, oh, I had a picture of me and you.
Yeah.
And he goes, who's that? I go, oh, that's my friend Straw Hat Goofy. And he goes,
wait,
who? I go, well, his name's Juju. I call him Juju, but he goes by Straw Hat Goofy. And he's like, you mean Luffy? And I was like, no, Goofy. And he's like,
I love this.
And he comes, because he's been reading these manga books
that
he's obsessed with.
Yeah.
Which then I knew were being adapted into a live action. I didn't even know how deep the anime was.
Yeah.
And
it's a deep one. Yeah.
Our whole house is now One Piece, and I love it. It's such a cool world, man.
And you said he's nine, right? And he's nine. All the manga.
Not only is he an authority, we should have him come on the show. That'd actually be fun.
I'm honestly down for that. Any One Piece fan is good with me.
I would love to have him come sit with me and talk to you, because his ideas about this stuff is fantastic. And he's always creating, what are they called? Quirtles? Quirty? Where he does like little online quizzes.
Oh, yeah.
And they're always about One Piece, because he's got like fan people that are like answering his questions and stuff.
Okay.
But he's also a master of video games. Really? So here's...
What's he into?
He loves Overwatch, Fortnite. Mm-hmm. Nine, dude. He's nine, and he's a master of anything Mario.
Okay.
He's a master of Mario. He loves Kirby. But right now, the world that he spends, I'd say, the most time in, and now we play together. Like, I have it on my phone because when I log into it, it'll say, like, Arlo, that's my kid. Like, I know, because we're connected on the system.
Yeah.
He's in this space. So then I join him, and we play even in different parts of the house. But let's say I'm traveling for work.
Yeah.
We could be playing together. So Roblox.
Roblox is the big one. Yeah. My daughter doesn't play, but she's obsessed with Roblox. She likes watching other people play Roblox.
Dude, it's a universe.
It's
expanding every day. And it's all user-generated, built by the people, kind of in the way that, like, you imagine Minecraft works.
Right.
But what's so fascinating about Roblox is there's all these different games. It's an infinite number of games. Mm. And they're just so weird. Yeah. And, like, I don't get it. And so I follow him. He's like, we're playing this game called... Secret House or something.
It's a game within the game of Roblox.
Within.
That's insane.
Because Roblox, there's slap battles and murder party and da 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 da. It's a platform. Basically.
I never understood. I hear
so
about
it's a
it,
platform.
But I never understood it. Yeah,
where you create your avatar and you create who you are, but that character, it's all first person, and then that person can participate in any of them. There's an infinite number of games within the platform. They all look the same. They're all designed the same because it's from the same mechanics, right?
Right.
But some of them are completely different. Like there's one that's like Among Us, but it's called Murder Party, where you're with a bunch of people in a house walking around trying to figure out who's the killer and who's part of the sheriff's team. But then there's a game that me and my son play all the time called Slap Battles, where literally your job is to walk up and slap people in the face, and then the more slaps you get, the more points you get, then you can buy bigger, crazier hands. And now they do like the double slap. My kid is so good at it. He's got a slap that slaps you and then it hits you with the AOL inbox message.
Oh, that's tight.
It's like, you got mail, which you can't, your character clicks on it even if you don't want to, and then it blows you up.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm going to actually, my daughter's been begging me to play like Roblox for a while, but I always thought she was kind of too young because she's six. But she always watches on YouTube, and her favorite thing to watch is, it's this other separate thing that kids are into nowadays that I had no idea about till she started talking about it. It's called The Amazing Digital Circus.
I don't know about it yet. Maybe my daughter. My daughter's six. She more watches, we have like the kids' YouTube channel set up, and she watches Mr. Beast.
Yes.
She watches, what is, she's been really into, interesting, she goes on the kids' Netflix, and I think it's on Netflix, she's watching Young Sheldon.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Sheldon.
She's six. She loves it. But we'll check it. What's it called? The Circus?
It's called the Amazing Digital Circus.
Amazing Digital
Apparently
Circus.
It's these people who like animated this pilot episode that they were trying to ship off to these different networks. The pilot episode went nuts. I'm talking like, I think there are 12 million views on YouTube. And now it got so nuts that people create like TikToks and shorts and music. It's just this whole universe off of this one pilot.
Wow.
And she's obsessed with it. She has the merch now. She watches people play Minecraft and Roblox, and they recreate these characters. And we were actually at LA Comic-Con, and she actually met the voice actress who plays the main character named Pommy.
That's so awesome.
And now she carries this Pommy doll like everywhere she goes. So now I'm like, okay, so now that I know a little bit more about Roblox, I want to kind of like get into that.
Yeah, it's a cool space which feels like very democratic. It feels like people are in there creating, and as a parent, there's a way you can obviously supervisorily make sure that they're not on like chats and stuff that. And the gaming is all relatively PG to PG-13 to G.
Okay.
I think it's great. I think models like that for gaming, entertainment, and everything are fascinating because it's like, here's like a machine that we built. Here's the way the engine of this gaming system works.
Right.
Anybody wants to join can come in and join, and then you could start building your own stuff. Now, Roblox obviously will then be able to capitalize on creators that are in that space making the games, because then those games will come fall. I don't know how they monetize anything, to be honest, because I'm like, it's free. There's no advertising in it.
Right.
Somebody somewhere is getting paid, but
nobody's doing it.
It's super fun. And Arlo and Penny, those are my kids. I've just like you and I bonded when we first met over the fact that we are such unabashed fans of genre, comic books, anything in the space of animation, anime, etc. I think it's been wonderful having kids as creative and inventive and cool as Arlo and Penny are, because they're now introducing me to new stuff.
Yeah.
And they still also dig some of my stuff.
Yep.
Which is rad.
That's really cool. Me and my daughter, like we've had like we have daddy-daughter like bonding moments where we watch One Piece together.
I love it.
And we both dressed up as Luffy at LA Comic-Con and for Halloween. So like I was like, this is more than anything a dad could ask for. And said, she introduces me to a lot of stuff. And then we like kind of like go into these worlds together. And so like I feel like as a parent, that's like the best thing you can hope for is like, you know, someone who's raising a child, you know?
It's huge.
It's great. Now, I know we talked a lot about like video games, and this is like a movie podcast, but this is what we're talking. It's like we're bonding over nerdy stuff. This is how you and I like became
friends. And storytelling in 2024, it's all connected. It's all interconnected with the digital revolution in which we are living. You can either be afraid and resistant to it, which I get, because I'm old school, and there's certain things where I'm like, oh, I want that like traditional blah, blah, blah. But then, or you can go, okay, this is where it's going.
You got to lean into it
between
sometimes, you know?
Gaming and animation and live action, genre in particular is just exploding.
I think that word
it's
right
so
there,
cool.
Genre. It's genre, right? And I feel like that is, no matter if you're a horror nut, you're gonna love everything about horror, whether it's film, video games, TV.
I didn't even understand how cool video game horror could be.
Oh yeah.
And then, I got hooked up with the most recent Texas Chainsaw Massacre game.
Ooh, my brother's been getting me on that one. So it's so fun.
So somebody really important in my life who is a creative partner of mine, and we've been, you know, friends forever. My friend Leah, she's a really great gamer, and we did like a live stream where she was playing Texas Chainsaw, and I kept like popping out from behind. But I think that I want to actually, in the age of this revolution too, I think people, what's great about it is it then leaves people hungry for live, immersive, interactive things. Like when you go to a con and you realize, I think it would just blow up if you do, you know, they do activations sometimes.
Yes.
So let's say you're at San Diego Comic Con and we could do a one piece activation, but instead of it just being walk up to a screen, do a thing, da da da, with a cool set.
Yeah.
What if it was a walkthrough?
Like more immersive.
It was like a haunted house almost.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it doesn't need to be in a huge space. They did something similar for Boogeyman at the Midsummer Scream last year, where like you went into a space and you were, the lights went out.
Yep.
And then someone was trying to give you instructions like through a PA.
Mm-hmm.
But the creature, there was an actor in there pretending like the creature that was like grabbing your leg and you can't see anything. But your friend who's watching you sees you in night vision. So they're like, okay, there's a table next to you. You got to reach in the drawer of that table. And you're like.
So teamwork thing going on.
It was great. I was like, we could be doing stuff like this.
Yeah. And I think we should, to be honest. Like as soon as you said the One Piece thing, and I'm like, you mashed that with horror. One Piece fans, you already know where I'm going with this. Thriller Bark, One Piece, a whole activation. That would be crazy for, see, you're just like, what? Who, what? Ask your kids. They'll know about
Thriller Bark.
Thriller Bark.
Okay.
One Piece. It's a whole like arc that has, that's like a horror-centric thing.
Okay, okay.
It's incredible.
I mean, there's stuff that is scary.
Yeah.
I'm sometimes like when they're in jail and some of these like.
Dipple down.
Woo! Yeah. It gets really intense. And I was like, is this okay? You know what? I had to stop my kid from watching, unfortunately, because it's really good.
What?
It was too scary. And it also had too much like adult themes in it. But he'll get back on it when I think he's like 12, 13.
Okay.
Speaking of meeting voice actors too. So he was obsessed with Demon Slayer. Which I love Demon Slayer, but he's nine.
Yeah.
And there's some stuff in there that's a little too intense. But then we went to one of the cons, I forget what it was, but the awesome actors who were like the main characters on.
He's young too.
To meet.
He's like
young. Yeah, young guy.
Young guy.
Big Naruto fans.
Yeah.
Big Airbender fans. Mm. Big, you know, we love it all, man.
Of course, dude.
And I want to do the movie adaptations of everything.
I'm telling you, I'm saying, we talked about you doing the One Piece one. Like, I want to see you in Avatar.
Airbender, I would love to be part a part two. Of, if there was a way to be a part of something like One Piece, which is just so well done. Like, I love the world that they're building and the fact that they have the ability to bring something to a live action space that still is true to the fact that getting shot with a cannonball, the way his skin stretches and everything.
Yeah, I'm like, dude. Oh, I was like, man, this is One Piece. This is what I want. This
is
exactly what I want.
I would, as an actor, to me, those are the challenges that get very exciting.
Yeah.
Like somebody saying, we're going to do a live action Demon Slayer. We're going to do a live action One Piece. Mm. We're going to do a live action. I don't know if anybody out here is even aware of it. I don't even know how it would work because it's so weird.
Okay.
But I've been a longtime fan of a show called Black Butler.
I know Black Butler.
Okay.
Yeah.
So imagine the live action version.
Yeah.
Here I am. Yeah. I am your servant. Like, I think I could really crush that role, but I don't know who's going to finance a weird ass show about
honestly, they're
and his demon servant.
Honestly, they're financing
everything.
They have
this weird relationship together. It's such a great show, man.
Honestly, with the rise of animation, live action adaptations now, specifically with Netflix, with Yu Yu Hakusho, One Piece, now they're doing Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah, yeah.
They also did.
I haven't gotten to see Avatar yet. I gotta check it out.
I saw the first episode. It's incredible so far. Like, we'll see where it goes, but so far, as a fan, I'm like, I'm with it. Also, like, not the best received Death Note live action, as well as like Cowboy Movie.
But it was the fact that it got made. The source material is so good.
Exactly. And I feel like Mike Butler's one of those things.
And the creator of Death Note, obviously, is like such a legend. So, like, thinking of like everyone's so like, you know how it's hard?
Yeah.
Like, the first time, how many times a Marvel thing that we're all fans of and everyone's like, or a DC thing or whatever. It's like, it's hard when something is so beloved to win fans over, but they could do it again. I think that. Just staying, even in
totally
animation, I want to do more voiceover. I've been doing a lot of the Warner Brothers. I recently got to play the Flash in the Ruby JLA crossover.
Okay.
I've done a lot of the Batman animated features. I've played Calendar Man. I've gotten to play Mr. Freeze, the Penguin. But
heavy hitters, guys.
I want to do. If they do another season of Blue Eyed Samurai.
People keep telling me to get on to that.
You haven't watched
it? I haven't watched it yet. I saw the first episode, was like, this is dope. But then I think I had to travel.
Dude.
And
it's so good.
Okay.
I could
Okay.
I'm going to rewatch it. It's that good.
If you're telling me to watch it, I'll definitely like speed run that like over the weekend for sure. Because
it's
that's
one of those two. Like you finish the episode and you got to know what happens.
Right, right. Okay. Because it's been like top of my most recommended.
I'm a huge Castlevania fan.
Ooh.
Did you watch that series
at
all?
I did not watch that one.
It's great. And it reminds me of in that space where it's for adults, not for the kids. It's R-rated, I'd assume. The violence is pretty intense. The language is bad. Some of the themes are intense, but like the writing is so good. The character development is so awesome. Castlevania, you got to check it out.
I got to check
it out. Because it's anime style of storytelling, and it's explosively like awesome with like, because the way that they set up the whole structure of Dracula's narrative in it is like, it's pretty great.
Okay, for sure. Last thing before we get to like, your new movie that's coming out pretty soon.
Yes.
And as well as like talking about your career leading to that new movie, because I think it's fascinating. I think it's like really cool.
Thanks.
But Arcane. Have you seen Arcane? Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a lot of Jeremy Slater fans out there. Jeremy Slater created Moon Knight, the TV series. Yep. He started Umbrella Academy.
Yep.
He's written the Exorcist TV show. He's a very good friend of mine. I remember Jeremy was like, have you seen Arcane yet? And I was like, oh, I should check it out. And he's like, dude, you got to check it out. It's so awesome.
It's so great, man. What they do with its animation, what it does with its three-part storytelling, how I think it's like, what, every two episodes, they kind of like do a time jump.
Mm-hmm.
I love that form of storytelling. Me and my best buddy, he's the one who actually gave me my name, Straw Hat Goofy. So we talk about it all the time, and we always talk about just how well pace that show is, how it's able to do that. So yeah, Arcane, we love it.
How about the live action adaptation of Arcane?
Hey,
there it is. Sign me up, guys. I want to be in there.
I think we've pitched like so many roles for you in this first like 10 minutes.
Somebody's watching this.
Somebody's watching
this. Who's like going into an executive meeting at one of these big companies and like, look, oh, David Desmulchin apparently wants to be on this. Oh.
Look, she's smiling. She's like, yeah, we could do that.
You know, it's happened to me before where my fandom or nerddom about a thing landed me in a project. Mm-hmm. And the example I want to give you will lead us into the conversation.
Okay.
So I'm a longtime horror fan since childhood, but I was raised in like the not most supportive horror house. It was a very religious home. My mother,
which is where the horror
loved me deeply, but she was also like very afraid of like scary things. Yeah, she thought it was, you know, demonic, it was evil.
My grandma used to say it's the devil in the TV.
Yes. So like I was hiding, like Fangoria magazine was like my Playboy when I was a kid. You know what I mean? I'm like
it's under
this
the bed,
is my secret thing. Dungeons and Dragons was like a secret thing, like a secret passion, because that was all considered too many monsters and stuff.
Right.
So I was introduced to a lot of the early horror that I got to love by our late night creature feature host in Kansas City called Cremation Mortem. And she would show us the old films late at night, and I'd be sneaking downstairs watching the Cremation show. And then, you know, eventually now my life is what it is, where I'm a, you know, professional storyteller, and I write comic books about horror hosts and monsters. And I love making films that are in the genre space. And, you know, lost my mother in the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. And I had several moments of reflection on the times in which she did sit with me or maybe hold my hand when I was scared, even though she didn't want to watch something scary. I think it was like thinking back to like Psycho, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a little kid and seeing that on TV. And so I wrote an article for Fangoria magazine about the importance of the horror host culture and the way that these kind of silly characters would introduce us to scary things and then be there to like fan out and geek out and talk about it in between during commercial breaks.
That's cool.
And the art, and then it tied into my mom and just, you know, the scary things that scare us and the people that help us get through those. Well, Colin and Cameron Cairns, who are the brothers that wrote and directed Late Night with the Devil, were getting that film going. They live in Australia, but they're Fangoria readers. Right. So they read my article, and whatever it was that I said in there about the late night, you know, TV world of the 70s, 80s, blah, 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 they were like, this guy is who we want to be our late night talk show host for our movie, Late Night with the Devil. So they brought my name up to their producer, one of their producers, Roy Lee, who I have known for a long time, and Roy sent me the script with the deck. I started looking at the deck, which was just so awesome because this movie is set in 1976, 77, and it's all a culture and a time that is such a
moment. I love the aesthetic. The trailer. I love the aesthetic, dude.
Dude, and I was like, I'm in. And so that's how I became a part of Late Night with the Devil.
That's awesome. All right, let's get into that.
Yes.
Usually on the show, Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy, we have our guests like wreck us, like their favorite movies that like
change
the chemistry. But I think like before we even get into that, let's talk about this wreck, which is your new movie.
Yes.
This is your first starring role, right? Like your first like headlining role.
It's my first starring role in a movie. It sounds embarrassing. My first starring role in a movie that I didn't write and produce myself. So, you know, I did. I made a movie called Animals, which I wrote and produced and starred in, that was a South by Southwest winner back in 2014. And then I wrote and produced a movie called All Creatures Here Below, where Karen Gillan and I were the leads. But this is the first time. Well, actually, no. I did a movie called Teacher. I've done a couple of indies for that I've gotten a chance to play like what you would consider the main character,
the headliner, but top of the call sheet.
This is the first time in a film that's getting this kind of a release, this kind of you know, this kind of attention. So it's very that's nerve-wracking.
I bet, man. Yeah, but here's the thing: like you're crushing it so far with it. Like your performance so far in the trailer, like just soaking that in. I want to know more about your character, and we could talk about that because from the synopsis I read that this is a late night show host who is a rival of Johnny Carson.
Yes, yeah,
and he's trying to look for a way to kind of like, you know, up his viewership and things like that, and he unleashes like demons like through the TVs to the viewers. Like you talked like a little bit about that. It sounds like super exciting.
Sure. So Jack Delroy, host of Night Owls, is like charming, personable, funny, good host of
very
a show.
Much like David.
But like right. No. Which is wild. Because that you know me, my work, I'm usually playing the roles that I think I've been drawn to. Maybe a little more obscure guys,
right.
Dudes that lurk in the shadows, you know, more, you know, that like juicy, fun character actory, kind of off figures.
Right.
So when these guys said to me, they want me to be the host of a talk, you're talking about like,
what?
The Conan O'Brien, Johnny Carson, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, blah, 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 Seth Meyers. The way back to David Letterman and Jay Leno and then Dick Cavett. And then there's this guy, Don Lane, who was a huge talk show host in Australia at the time. It was a big inspiration for the writers, directors in the film. Mm. So Night Owls is a good show, but it is way behind Carson in the ratings. So far behind that it's on the chopping block.
Okay.
And Jack Delroy was so obsessed with success, with saving his show, with validating. He'd recently lost his wife, so he was, and he didn't really even deal with that, and he was an alcoholic. So he's like spiraling a little bit, and the only thing that he's got is this show and his audience and his fans. And so he decides, because it's the Halloween episode, and any day they could get the call, like, you're done. They need a night that like the ratings just go through the roof.
Save their
ass. So he bends, you could say, the parameters of ethics. There is a woman who he's developed this relationship with, who is the author of this book, which chronicles the journey of this young woman who has been rescued from a really terrible situation.
Yeah.
And is having episodes where she believes that she is a demon, or that there is a demon within her called Mr. Wiggles.
That's always the worst type of demons with names
that. Got a weird accent. Weird Captain Howdy, Mr. Wiggles.
Mr. Wiggles, like Charlie. Like.
And she's like, why is his name Mr. Wiggles? And she goes, because he wriggles around inside of me. I was like, that freaked me out. I had so many moments making this movie where I had goosebumps. But so Jack, in an effort to do something good, does bend. We've all been in that place too, where you're like, I know that I really shouldn't do this. This girl is not well. And he, and the woman who's caretaking for her is like, I just don't think we should do this. Not a good idea. And Jack is like, I want to help show the world that like the work you're doing, how important this is. But like, he knows that stuff is going to go wild, right? So he sets the table, if you will, for a night of what he is counting on being shocking, newsworthy,
right?
You know, water cooler moment TV.
People will go be talking about it the next
day. He didn't count on what was going to really happen. And things went real bad. I mean, a lot of factors outside of anybody's control. So the horror of the film is tied so deeply into the comedy of this weird show.
Right.
The fact that things start going off the rails and it's in front of a live television audience.
Yeah.
And the cameras are rolling.
It's one of those, anything can happen. You can't stop it. Keep it rolling.
Dude, it's so fun. I've had such a lucky career. I'm one of the most blessed people I know. I am 22 years clean and sober, a mental health journey that is hard and difficult and dark as it can be. And yet I get to work with, you know, Peyton Reed and James Gunn and Christopher Nolan and Denis Villeneuve and all these amazing artists and filmmakers. And I've gotten to play all these characters and all these genre-based types of stories, which means so much to me. And with this film, it just was like some of the most fun I ever had. As scary as it got. Yeah, sometimes it got real scary, but that's really good.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. Like, do you mean like scary as like a sense of like you said, you were like really nervous and nerve-wracking, or scary as in like...
There were times, legitimately, things on set.
Oh, gosh.
Like, the girl who plays Lily, Ingrid, is... so talented. She's like a discovery. Mm-hmm. I think this was her first role. Okay. I could be wrong, but if not, it was definitely her first big role. I like walk by her dressing room at one point at the studio, and she was in there like in the mirror, like getting ready. And I caught a glimpse of like some weird stuff she was doing like in the prep. And I was like, okay, that's freaking me out. Then we were on set doing a scene, and like she'd say something and her voice like would change in a way that would like make me very uncomfortable. I don't like it.
I don't like that.
And it took me back to my mom too, being like, don't play around with that stuff because, you know. So here I am making a movie, playing around with that stuff.
Mama was right.
Like, the walls are like getting weird at one point. Noises are weird. But the other thing that was the most terrifying was, like I said, I've never imagined myself being the person that you would ever think is the guy who could hold a talk show. Like, that just doesn't seem like... in my wheelhouse. So I have to deliver this 2.5-3 minute monologue, as all talk show hosts do, at the top of the show, where I walk out in front of a live studio audience, and they had a real audience in there with a live band and nothing but me and them. And to me, I knew if I fell on my face, if I let that moment down, if it didn't work, if it didn't sing, the movie's not going to work. No one's going to buy Dave Desmalchin. It's already hard enough to imagine Dave Desmalchin is a Johnny Carson. What? Shouldn't he be like a psycho killer guy or something?
He's supposed to be a weirdo.
I'm like, so I was so scared. And you know how this is in life, whether it's becoming a new parent, taking on a new gig, moving to a new city, trying a new job, trying to get mental health, trying to get sober, whatever that may be. It's those leaps of faith we take that are always the most, I think, important, lead us to the most important terrain. And that's what happened with this movie. I think the performing of this role changed the way I act. I think it made me a better actor. It also came on it preceded me then going to get to work with Nolan again on Oppenheimer, getting to work on some phenomenal projects with writer directors like Brian Fuller and Mike Flanagan. And I can feel the difference in my work based on what I learned from that experience of facing that fear.
Right.
And being willing to be vulnerable and stand in front of. It's also like being back in theater because you got, 200 people sitting waiting for you to like make them laugh.
Yeah.
Whew.
Or in some cases, they're waiting for you to fuck up.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
You know, that's the beauty of live TV. It's kind of like, what's going to happen? And you're like front and center of that. And I like how you describe this as almost like you've been acting, like you said, for a while, but this is like a new stretch for you because, you know, you're aware that people are like, David can't see him as like a talk show host.
Absolutely.
But the fact you took all that challenge says everything, right? So that's really cool. Like, so I want to like talk about, you talked about this evolution, and I see this as almost like your, I don't want to say like coming out party because that implies that like you ain't been around this shit for a while, but I want to say like, it taught you how to be, like you said, a better actor. Let's go back to the beginning where you know, you were doing these roles with like Christopher Nolan and James Gunn and all these guys. Like, what was that role that like challenged you the most when you first started out? Like where you said, like, this is, I think I got it now. Do you have any roles like that?
Yeah, it was, as an actor for me, it started in theater, mm-hmm. so on stage. Mm-hmm. So doing, there was a particular Clifford Odets play that I did called I Got the Blues based on Awake and Sing, or was the original version of Awake and Sing. And then you know, coming out of my college years, I was deeply into the throes of my addiction. And there was a number of years where it was about just being an addict or getting clean. So there was a lot of years I didn't act.
Right,
so
right.
Getting back on stage, there's two roles I think about often that really stand out to me. One was the first role back. I played a character called Naraboth in Salome, the Oscar Wilde adaptation of Salome, in which I was a soldier who's obsessed with this woman and she refuses him and he's so obsessed that he kills himself because he loves her. Doing that in front of an audience of live people showed me that I not only could be an actor again, but that I could do it without my drugs.
Yeah.
That I was going to be able to go home at the end of the night and just have nothing but a tombstone pizza and I'd be okay. That was a huge moment for me. Then getting up and doing roles outside of my comfort zone included Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie and Sam Shepard's Buried Child. Those really, really did it for me in a major way. Then, like, the way The Dark Knight happened was so wild. That changed my life because I auditioned for one of the Joker's one of the bank robbers in the beginning of the film, the clown bank robbers.
Right.
The casting director, John Papsidera, who I owe so much gratitude to, he liked me so much he had me come back and get to read the scene for Chris Nolan, which was a dummy scene, but it was a scene about a bank robber talking about this guy thinks he's getting our money, like he's crazy. I heard he's like dresses up like a thing and da da da.
Right.
But I played it the way I felt like I would play it, the way somebody who might be working under the Joker might play it. Like I brought like a mania to the it. Joker. There was something.
Yeah.
There was something he needed. Work for the Joker. Off. And I've been collecting, Joker, comics since third grade, so I know this lore deeply. It's like, to me, I was like, this is the moment. This is it. This is when my dreams of going to Hollywood, because I'm a Chicago theater actor.
Uh-huh. That was filmed in Chicago.
And comic
right?
book love.
Yeah.
This is the moment, right? This is when fate has lined up and I'm 5 years clean at this point. I'm like,
everything's lined up for you.
So
yeah.
I do the callback with Nolan. I was doing a production of Shakespeare's Othello at a place called Writers Theater where I would take like a 45-minute train ride to rehearsals. A week after I had that callback, I read in the paper that they had shot this scene in downtown Chicago at the old post office, which they converted to a bank, and it involved a bunch of clowns.
Mm-hmm.
And I was devastated. Yeah. I like crumpled up the newspaper. I missed it. Went and did Othello for 4 months. It closed in July. I had no idea what my next job was going to be. I was looking at unemployment and figuring out how to get back on stage. My birthday got a call that they had saved me. They didn't want me for that clown role. They had this other role and that I was going to play this guy. And I went and I did the role. I used all the tools that I tried to learn over the years from being a theater actor. All of the fear that I had going into it, I knew that I was not going to pull off trying to play it cool. And I wasn't going to be some intimidating thug that wasn't going to work. So all the energy especially vibrating inside of me, my first time ever being on a film set, walking into a hair and makeup trailer with Gary Oldman and Heath Ledger. And
wait, that was your first time on a film set?
That role? First movie I ever did.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I walked in, didn't even know what I was doing. They were so secretive about that movie, they hadn't even really told me what the role was.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to channel all of this energy. And Nolan gave me some of the greatest acting advice. So you get the best little notes sometimes and they can change the way you look at everything. Because all my experience at that point had been either some TV commercials or theater.
Yeah.
And for theater, I've got to tell a story with my face and my eyes and my body to the back row. So there's an art to that.
It's all about
projection,
right?
How we can create that fictional, authentic feeling expression of emotions and ideas and character to people 400 feet away.
Right.
And what Actually, it wasn't. It was Pap Sedera. He, you know what it was? That first time I read, that first day before he brought me in for Nolan, he watched me do my whole scene. He was like, dude, this is really good. Yeah. You got something. Do me a favor. I want to bring you back tomorrow. I want you to meet Chris. I want you to go home tonight. Get in front of the mirror. Do whatever you got to do. But you got to take all this amazing stuff you're doing and put it here.
Oh.
And then that just made sense to me. Because here's the camera. All of this big stuff I could be doing is going to read. Because the camera's a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
It's going to read.
It'll read the fake. Subtleties.
It's going to read fake if I'm doing all of this. Even if it feels authentic. So he's like, can you take that energy? And if you can put it here, he's like, you're going to get it. And that's a lesson I've carried with me ever since. So that was the role that definitely changed everything for me. It put me not only into the world of being able to walk into offices once I came to LA 2 years later and say, I was in a movie. And they're like, oh yeah, which part? Oh yeah, I remember that. You know? And like, okay, can I get an audition? Like, no.
I mean, it's crazy because that movie came out 2008. I was 16.
Go on.
When that movie came out.
Make me feel old. Go ahead.
It makes me feel old too, okay? Like that, I was 16 when that movie came out. But I remember that scene. And then like when I see you in other movies after that, I remember first seeing you in that moment. I was like, you were the crazy guy that like Batman couldn't break because, you know, fucking Joker just picked this guy up, used him as a pawn. And I was like, that's so crazy how you started from there. And now I'm seeing you like everywhere.
And I owe so much to that movie because filmmakers and directors also noticed that role.
Yeah.
So someone like Denis Villeneuve, who I auditioned by tape for Prisoners, he apparently loved whatever I did on my audition for the role of Bob Taylor in Prisoners, but he remembered me from The Dark Knight. And he, I'm still very close with Denis, but also some of the producers of that film who said he was the only vote for you. They really wanted like a name or somebody recognizable from that role. At that point, I had one two-line role in a movie, you know? And they say he fought and fought and fought for you. And I was like, wow. So then I get to Atlanta to start working on Prisoners. And I meet Denny for the first time in person. And one of the first things he asked me is like, what was he like on The Dark Knight? I want to know about
Denny's tell Dark me about Knight, man. I love this.
Christopher Nolan. And they're such fans of each other. They're such admirers of one another's art that I can't tell you how honored it is as a feeling to me as an actor that I've gotten to work with both and to see how much they are similar and yet their own totally entities. It's fascinating. I'm like I said, I can always go back to this, man. Here's my gratitude cup and it's so overflowing. It's like flooding this room. I mean, I'm the luckiest nerd that ever walked.
Dude,
I feel like.
That's why I said like I think your career is just so fascinating and I love it because like you've gotten to work with some like big heavy hitters. Also big, like not just big movies, but influential movies, man. Like I'm talking like Dune, you know, I'm talking like I just saw Dune 2 last night. And
I'm jealous. I haven't gotten to see it yet. I heard it's a masterpiece.
It's
man.
A masterpiece. I will
say I thought that. Dune was a masterpiece. So now Dune 2 is even better, they're saying. And
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah, it is. It is. Like the way Denis is able to like capture scope and scale, and his cinematographer is just on another level in this movie. I think he was holding back in Dune 1. And then part 2, he just said, all right, let's
show these. Greg Fraser, who shot Dune and Dune 2, also shot The Batman and many other incredible things. But Greg is, to me, like, and Denis, wow, when you think about the DPs he's worked with, just like Nolan. I mean, it's amazing. Nolan's Hoyta and Wally Pfister, and then Denis with people like, obviously, Greg is a genius, and Roger Deakins is
Roger
a genius.
Deakins,
and I think what Greg manages to do when creating a reality that looks, and granted, they do use a lot of real locations. They go to the desert. They build stuff. But there's a magic.
There's more to that.
There is
there's
a magic in the way he makes that thing come alive. Yeah. And I'm so lucky, man. I've been like on, so there's a camera. Imagine I've been on this side of a camera where like the Picassos of cinematography have been on the other side, like making me not look like garbage.
And they and they love you, bro. Like, there's no way you could look like garbage. But like, I always knew this, like the moment I met y'all, like this dude David is so lovable. Like, so goddamn lovable. Like, the fact that, like, Christopher Nolan, Denis, like, I'm still waiting for James Cameron to, like, hit you up. I'm still waiting on that, to be
honest.
What's
he doing next?
I mean, he's
He's got all the Avatar things, but he's pretty locked in. I don't think I get to be a part of that.
Like, bringing that back, like, you know, not like,
wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh, yeah. I would love
it. Like, a sequel to The Abyss or The Abyss Universe.
I would love
what that. Would feel like.
I think he's so focused on the one that he made and, like, making it look like how it should look like re-releasing it, things like that.
Yeah.
But, dude,
Have you gotten to interview him?
No, not yet. I did. Oh, this past, I think it was like 3 weeks ago at the Saturn Awards. And you know, I asked him, like, what he's, you know, obviously he's created some, like, great iconic movie worlds, like Terminator, Avatar, like, you know, been playing in the Aliens universe as well.
Yes, yes.
You know? But I asked him, like, what's a movie universe that, like, he would like to go to? And one, he said Star Wars, because Star Wars, like, has inspired everything that he does. But then he also had the highest of praise of the Dune universe, specifically Denis' Dune universe. And he had, like, I have a video that I still haven't posted, but it's just him just going on about how, like, masterful Denis is when it comes to, like, adapting something that he thought was unadaptable.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, I just love how, like, Christopher Nolan, who, like, I would say he's, like, a sci-fi director because, like, a lot of his concepts are, like, high-concept sci-fi. You know, Denis, who's, like, probably, I think, the master of sci-fi right now. And then you have James Cameron, who is so in it. He's like, let me take like 5-6 years to put out this one movie. And the love that they have for each other.
Yeah.
And like, I have this thing where I love hearing the account of other people from other people and then putting those pieces together and like seeing how they stack up. And hearing about like Denis from like James Cameron, you, and now Christopher Nolan, I'm like, it's so cool. It's so cool.
James Cameron, if you're watching, I'm here. Guillermo del Toro. If you're watching,
hey,
I'm here.
Yo,
I'm ready.
Have you not worked with Guillermo yet?
No, man.
Really?
I've got to.
I have to.
Obsessed with him. I'm obsessed with him. I'm obsessed with Tim Burton. I'm obsessed with so many people. The director I was the most obsessed with when I moved to Los Angeles in 2010, and I'm a big goal setter.
Yeah.
So I always keep a vision board above my work desk. I've got all my projects. I've got my words up above the top. Like, and as an actor, dream goals. When I moved to LA, they were. We'll get into my. We're going to break some brains here in a second, right?
Ooh,
we're going to
wreck some
brains. We're going to talk about the movies
that really
can't wait. But at the top left was, I want to work with the Muppets because the Muppet movie when I was a child changed my life.
Yes, yes.
On the right was, I want to play a James Bond villain because seeing Moonraker at the drive-in when I was a little kid and seeing what a villain on film could do to a story.
They got
like huge
Bond has
for me.
Some of the greatest villains too.
And then in the middle was I wanted to get to act under the direction of David Lynch, Dune director as well.
Okay.
And Lynch cast me in his return to Twin Peaks as Pit Boss Warwick for several episodes, and getting to be around him on set was also one of those. Thinking back to these moments that changed me as an actor, the freedom, the creative. Kind of destiny that he sees seeping and breathing deep under the consciousness of all of us that's just waiting for those of us who are willing to like be still, listen, reach down, allow it to come up was such a great lesson for me because often as an actor, I feel very driven to try and I need to make sure we get this thing really nailed and I get this thing right or we do this thing. And there was one moment where no dialogue, nothing. He had me just stand and just stare at an elevator. For like a minute, camera's just rolling, sweat's like running down my face, and I don't even know why. Oh, I know why.
Yeah.
Something bad had happened where I worked, and the bosses were gonna be coming up any second. But he made me just stand there. He didn't make me. He let me just stand there and have this moment of waiting and not doing anything and allowing something to come up from within me that was like so powerful.
That's. Dude, I'm telling you,
so,
man.
But the Muppet movie, if we want to talk about.
Yeah.
I find it so hard when I get asked a question like, what is your recommendation?
Yeah.
What is your recommendation?
What is that movie that like, you're like, everybody needs to see this?
I feel comfortable saying this on your show because I think if I'd have said it 10 or 20 years ago, people would be like, duh. But I think you've got a lot of young viewers.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of people out there that don't understand. So Muppets, please go see Muppets. Rent it. The original Muppet movie.
Yes.
It is incredible. It is a wonderful story about friendship and destiny and our desire for fame and recognition and approval and why we want that and what's the really important thing in life. But I would say if I'm going to wreck some brain, I need you to, if you've got a great projection system at home, if you've got a great way of watching a film, sit down one nice evening and allow yourself to experience Stanley Kubrick's 2001,
Ooh.
A Space Odyssey.
Okay, and y'all should definitely do that because you saw the biggest reference in the Barbie movie last year.
Yes,
yes. So if you were wondering what that opening scene was,
and
letting
you
know.
If you want to know a film that Denis Villeneuve, Christopher Nolan, every great director will reference as a movie that absolutely foundationally yep. changed the way they look at what is possible with movies. To me, 2001 is a sci-fi epic drama of the grandest scale that is also one of the most horrifying horror movies.
With one of the best villains.
One of the best monsters you can imagine. And it is so predictive of where we are now and the way that technology has just changed for us. Because when that movie came out in 1969, people were going, this is awesome. Yeah. What a cool idea, but that would never happen.
It would never happen. It's in your phone now.
Hello, Dave. I got my wife is such a great creative, and she's great with design. She designed us posters for our first apartment together that we could frame and hang because we couldn't even buy a damn movie poster. So she made us our own.
Right.
But she's like, what's your favorite movie? And I'll personalize it for you. I said, 2001 Space Odyssey. So she said, it's just Hal's eye.
Oh.
And it just says, hello, Dave. And I still got it, man. I love it.
Hers is
Young Frankenstein. So hers was a close-up of the door knocker, and it said, what knockers?
Okay, I'm gonna need a personalized
All right, for One Piece.
Oh, not just one. I was gonna say her. If we're sticking with movies.
Her.
That's my favorite movie of all time.
God, it's so good.
It's. I saw that in a film class, 2016.
A lot of people right now are. I have a friend who had a relationship with an AI.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a real one?
Well, I mean, they were tired of dealing with the dating scene, and so they're like, "I'm trying this app." It's a dating app with an AI.
Okay.
And it was really helpful to their feelings of loneliness and their fear of, interaction.
That's like the point of her though too.
I know.
Right? It's like, and people always ask me why is this your favorite movie of all time? I'm like, dude, what it says about human connection and human emotion and how we evolve as people, whether it's within ourselves or within relationships, sometimes those relationships either evolve apart or we can grow together. And the fact that he's doing that with an AI that's just learning how to be human in a sense, while also rediscovering what it means to feel. One of my favorite moments in that movie is with Joaquin Phoenix, who's amazing in that
movie.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
And I think Scarlett Johansson deserved a Best Supporting Actress nomination just for her voice alone. But it's when he's in his, he's talking to her on the phone, and he says, that when he was married, he felt all the heightened versions of all his emotions. And now that he's getting through a divorce, now he thinks that every feeling that he's going to have after this is just going to be lesser versions of things that he's already felt. So he's like, why bother? And so, but he had to rediscover that he had more than just those feelings for that person from his relationship with this AI. So it helped him in a way, like your friend.
Yes.
Kind of get through that. So that's my number one. People say, but it's so recent. It overtook everything for me. It was Shawshank for the longest time. And Shawshank is still my number
it's
two.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's perfect. And her, Shawshank Redemption, Your Name, and E.T. are four movies I consider just perfect. I can't give no notes to him.
Love it.
Right? So, but I love the, with Hal in 2001 Space Odyssey, I didn't watch that movie until, I want to say 2010. And that's because my favorite Pixar movie, which Dan Poffenmeyer would disagree with, we had a big argument over this, is WALL-E. And the Otto
so
is based off of Hal. And I remember always looking at Otto this antagonist is different. I like it. It's scary
and creepy.
It's creepy, but it's in a kid's film. And someone told me, that's based off of 2001, Space Odyssey. And I was like, really? And I always heard the I can't let you do that, Dave.
Yeah.
But I never knew where it came from. So I immediately watched the film after hearing this, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is one of the greatest movie monsters villains ever.
Kubrick, like Denis or Nolan, one of these directors that you feel like no matter what genre he was making a film in, you know, whether it's Barry Lyndon or, you know, 2001, the scope with which he could get lost in and really convey tone and story, The Shining, you go.
Oh, The Shining.
Wow, man.
Yeah. The Shining's one of my all-time favorite horror.
Or like a weird satirical political commentary like Dr. Strangelove, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
He can do anything. He can do anything.
So that's my big rec. I want you to do whatever you do before you watch a movie. Get in the nice headspace. Sit back. Kick off the lights and just give yourself over to the deep future of 2001, which is funny because you're like, things did not look like this at 2001.
No, right. But that was like what
imagine it's 3001.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we were afraid. Like, as soon as, remember 1999, everybody thought like the next day.
I did a movie about Y2K. Very small indie micro budget movie that my friend Joel Petraicus made, stars Joshua Burge, who's a genius. It's called Relaxer, and it's about it's 1999. I play the bully older brother of this dude, played by Josh Burge, and he doesn't have a job, so he's living for free on my couch. So I make him do all these stupid challenges to earn his keep. One of which is like he can't leave the couch, and he has to drink like a glass of milk every 5 minutes while playing Pac-Man. And if he can get to level 249, which there was this big challenge back in the day, you could get like $100,000 if you reach this level.
Really.
And I'm a doomsday prepping for the Y2K. But in this movie, Y2K actually happens. Like shit goes crazy. So if y'all want to find a really weird, obscure, cool
there you go.
Indie, that's actually because I know you like to ask for like what are good recommendations.
Yeah.
I suck at this because I want to just give you a long list. I would love for anybody watching to check out my indies. I'm really proud of Animals and All Creatures Here Below, especially if you're a Karen Gillan fan and you want to see what she can achieve outside of things we've normally seen her do. She plays in the film the equivalent of like Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Okay.
And she's heartbreaking in it. I think Roger Deakins and his wife James watched it and they had me on their podcast recently and they were like, Karen should have been nominated for an Academy Award. They were like, that is one of our favorite movies we've seen. So
put this over.
But I want you guys to see Relaxer by Joel Petraicus. I highly, highly recommend
Animals Relaxer.
Animals. Thank you. That's a movie that I wrote. I'm very proud of. I highly recommend if you've never seen the early films of James Gunn, I want you to go rent Slither.
Oh,
Super.
Ooh, Slither.
Like his Super. Movies.
That's where I fell in love with James Gunn, with Slither. That's where I fell in love. That's where my gun bromance.
I mean, it's like people, obviously, he just knows how to make the biggest, most insane, cool movies. But like he's never made a film where he's not deeply invested in these really complex characters.
Yeah.
Heroes who are totally flawed, irredeemable people who somehow find redemption. Yep. Like, you got to do that. If you claim you're a fan and you haven't seen the early canon, you need to correct yourself.
Absolutely. I still quote Slither to this day. Like me and my brother will still quote. Like I remember the scene where the guys in the car, they're driving away from the giant like monster thing. And the big like redneck guy had just got his wife like blown up.
Yeah.
And so he goes like, God, he just wanted his Dr. Pibb. And he has this meltdown over Dr. Pibb. And he's like, God damn it, these aliens driving our friends around like they're skip cars and wife blowing up, Mary's blowing up like a water balloon. And now I can't get no goddamn Dr. Pibb. I love Slither to this freaking day, man. Yeah, it has like a great like complex antagonist, right? Like it's like a guy who wasn't the best husband whatever.
He was gnarly, man. But awful. Rooker's so good.
He's good at it. Michael Rooker's
good. Oh, he's such a good actor. I love him. Nathan is so great. It's just such a great. It's so good, man.
See, I love this. I love these things. Okay, so as we like reach the final stretch of the show,
yes.
Like I want to know like, what are you excited to watch like later on this year? What do you have your eye on that you're like, that's going to be like really, really good?
I'm really excited to see Eggers is doing the Nosferatu.
Nosferatu. I tell people that's my most anticipated.
I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what they do with these live action adaptations. I haven't gotten to see Airbender yet. I love
that first One episode Piece. Is gonna throw you, dude.
So I wanna see what's to come with these shows.
Yeah.
Coming out down the pipeline, there's probably nothing that I haven't seen Dune 2 yet. So that is great, right now the thing I'm jonesing hard to see. But there's nothing that I am more excited about seeing than Superman.
Oh, James just posted that photo today of the cast.
To table read. Dude, that is going to be... I'm so excited.
I'm so stoked for that, dude. And it's like, I love Henry Cavill. I love Man of Steel. Love Man of Steel. I'm one of the few of my friends who genuinely like can't
loved
get enough
it.
Of
yeah.
it. Loved it. But as much as I love Henry Cavill and like his rendition of like Justice League and all that, this feels like a return to Superman, the way he's describing it. And he put out this I think it was like last year, he put out like this letter to the fans where he was talking about his decision to write and direct the movie, because you know he's head honcho now.
Head of
like,
the studio.
He doesn't have to, right? But the fact that he said this is very personal to me, because this is the story of a guy with two fathers, with two different teachings, and now he's like trying to like reconcile those things while being like an alien to this planet that he loves, and he like brought that around to like his relationship with his dad and the way he just discussed making a Superman movie. I said, I never had any doubts with James Gunn. I always say, in James Gunn, we trust. But it was after that where I was like, I have no worries about this film at all. No. I have nothing but excitement.
I'm buying tickets right now. I'm there. I'm front row. In James Gunn, we trust.
In James Gunn, we trust, baby.
I've always loved him as a human being and as an artist. But when I got to be on the Suicide Squad and I saw this world that he built, I was just like, this is it. He gets it on such a level, and he's so damn smart and passionate and gifted and visionary and relentless.
Yeah.
He's not going to stop until he gets what he needs,
right.
And we're all the luckier for it. You know?
Yeah, dude. I see. Now I want to talk to you about the Suicide Squad, because I'm sorry, I have to. Like, the first Suicide Squad, like, not my favorite. Not going to lie. It's not my favorite.
Sure.
I loved
it later. Hey, it gave us.
It gave us Harley Quinn.
The greatest gift.
It did. It did.
Gave us.
It gave us Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. And I always say that her story, the most consistent thing in the DC universe.
She was born to play that role.
Absolutely.
She destroyed that role. Joel crushed Rick Flagg.
Yes. Yes.
I thought Jai's like Boomerang was great.
Jai's Boomerang. Will Smith, you know, there's parts.
Great stuff in that
there's
film.
There's some great stuff in that film.
But it did feel like a series of short films that I almost wish we could have gotten in bite-sized like pieces. Like,
yeah.
Here's this person's story. Here's this person's story. But whatever. It's
like
cool.
The character introductions are great. Like, the character introductions
so cool.
are great.
Yeah.
And I know what the film was trying to do, but you could tell there was like some studio meddling and totally. You know that. And totally. It happens. It happens when you're making a movie.
Yep.
But the Suicide Squad, like, one, I say this was like, I think if they were to put my review onto the like DVD, it would be like a dark and twisted Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Right? Because like, it's about this group of people that like, despite like how different they are and that added wrinkle that they're all like bad guys, like truly like terrible murderers and people, they still like find some type of like common ground to where they're in a way a weird family. Right?
It's like Guardians of the Galaxy on steroids with the heart of the West Coast Avengers.
Yes.
It's like,
yeah, they're West Coast
so
Avengers.
So weird.
Good.
It's so weird. Such an obscure assembly of the weirdest people. And it's grounded in these insanely incredible performances.
Yeah.
You know, you think about getting Viola in there to just like,
oh, she's
set up this
another
world.
Thing we got great from the first one.
Oh, you're right.
Another
Her Amanda Waller is
Yep.
perfect.
Yep.
She is perfect. I want more Amanda Waller.
Thank you.
As much as I
she can
can't
stay Amanda
stand
Waller
that
for the rest
character.
Of her life. Yeah.
Because in the comics, she pisses me off
all
the time. She's
piece of work.
A piece of work. But she's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have not seen Amanda pushed the way that I want to see her get pushed.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, she's appeared in a couple of movies now. And like,
I know, but I want to see like what happens when she doesn't hold all the cards.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think she'll be a good liar though. I think
when she's in actual danger,
yeah.
What is that going to look like?
I would like to see that.
That would be awesome.
But what I really liked about the film is that you have these like characters who on the surface like are like either you're very basic like mercenary like Peacemaker Rick with Bloodsport. And they're both, they even make a joke that they're both the same guys doing the same thing.
That's a great scene when they're walking around showing off, seeing who's so got good. The better assassination tool.
I love it. I think about that scene all the time. But then like, again, you take the joke of like, he throws polka dots at people. Holy shit, he throws polka dots at people, huh? But then it's like this deep, tragic backstory.
Trauma.
It's this trauma, like his mother tried to create a superhero, but instead gave him a fucking virus. And I'm like, I just want to see this guy win. That's what I want. And then they fucking kill you, dude. Like, I was so upset. And like, I'm still like, I'm gonna like, my voice is cracking a little bit as well, like Walker in my last episode. But the fact that like the way we didn't have to see that backstory play out, but it's all in your face. Of what happened to you and what you've been through, it reminded me of David Tennant in the first season of Jessica Jones, right? Where
thanks, that's a great compliment. He was so good.
I think he's one of the best villains to like grace a TV screen. I think that first season is like absolutely perfect.
I love it. I love Kristen Ritter. I love that show. I thought it was so great.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, I tell people all the time, like, oh, what's, like, your favorite superhero show? And I always say the first season of Jessica Jones.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's perfect
TV. So good.
But with the Suicide Squad, again, Ratcatcher 2 with, like, her backstory with her father. You find out Bloodsport, why he's afraid of rats. You see, all these are just deeply messed up
individuals. That's a James Gunn movie, though.
And that's a James Gunn movie.
There's never a detail that isn't absolutely perfectly painted, and that's what makes his movie so special, you know?
I need some backstory on Weasel now. Like, I know he was like a gag character, but like,
he's in the comics though. There is a Weasel character in the DC pantheon. So let's say, James, we want to know, when do we get to find out more about the Weasel?
Let's do a Peacemaker show, but for Weasel.
Weasel. Just call it Weasel.
Just call it Weasel. That's absolutely it. Also Peacemaker. How good.
So good. And it's an opportunity for actors who are my friends, but also who I love, like, Jen Holland is so great.
Oh yeah,
as Harcourt. But Steve Agee, who is, you know, one of the closest people in my life, who I've always known has the talent and the potential to not only be funny as hell, but to have dramatic moments too, which he absolutely had. That Economos last episode of the season.
Yeah,
when he's having to go run the stuff into the fortress and confronting this whole nickname about being the die beard and everything. he's just the best, man. So he's to me, James just can do no wrong. In James we trust. I can't wait for season two of Peacemaker. I'm first in line for Superman. I'm excited to see where DC goes. I can't wait to see Creature Commandos. We're living in a great time to be a nerd. Dude.
And we should get like t-shirts in James We Trust. I'm surprised no one's done
that. Let's do that.
Let's make it.
All right.
Please bring it next red carpet I see you at. Just toss me one.
In James We Trust.
In James We Trust, baby.
Hey, in Straw Hat Goofy We Trust. In Juju We Trust. You are so awesome. Thank you for letting me be a part of this with you. Thank you for always being, you know, those events. Sometimes I go to a premiere and it's like a stressful time. It's a work event.
I can imagine.
You see your smiling face and to see your excitement and energy, it's always a lift. So thank you.
No, dude, honestly, I'm here whenever you need me, man. Like, see, I thank you so much for just being a part of this and just kind of like legitimizing me a little bit, because it's hard.
You're legit.
Here on TikTok, you know, but like, honestly, no, seriously, thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your work. So thank you for everything that you do, man.
Right back at you.
Absolutely crushing it.
Thanks to everybody who's watching us.
Thanks to everybody. Thanks to you guys.
Go see Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, yeah. Say it again one more time for the people in the back.
Late Night with the Devil.
That's it right there. Guys, thank you so much for watching Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. I'm here with David Stouse-Mouchin. We are just out here chilling out, so make sure you hit that like button. Make sure you hit the subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube, and the notifications so you get notified when these things type of drop. And also just follow the podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you're listening to podcasts at. It'll be great. But until next time, I will see you when we talk about the next movie.
You're so good at this.